Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
I don't expect us to be big spenders in free agency or anything like that. We still have to manage this cap because we're not going to try and set this thing up to go into a year where we got to strip it all down while we got number 17. We want to give him every chance every single year to see if that team can contend for a title.
Bills GM Brandon Bean. And there's a lot to this where the Bills are in a cap situation, but as Bean just said, he doesn't want them to be presenting a roster that is not strong. But that said, the numbers are going to be tight.
They'll find a way. I think they'll find a way to make it work. Years past have proven that.
Well, we'll keep talking about that, and what better way to talk about the Bills' offseason woes or potential problems than with friends of the program, including Alex Brasky. Joining us now here on the West Her Hotline, Alex, it's Derek and Joe. It's been a minute since we talked to you. Good to hear from you, and welcome in.
Yeah, hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Wish we were talking Super Bowl, but we're going to have to shift off-season mode whether we like it or not.
Oh, yeah. Whether we like it or not absolutely is the way to go about this. And the unfortunate part about this, Alex, being that it is the madness that starts to set in. It's the Chiefs again that beat you. It seems like there's this constant problem, but it's not just for the Bills. It's for the rest of the AFC. Over the last 6 years, only one other team has even shown up to the Super Bowl, that being Cincinnati. How do you gauge it at this point if it's the same team continuing dominance over the conference? How do you gauge it as to how far behind the Bills really are in terms of relative means?
Well, I don't think they're far behind at all. You lose to this team 2 straight years in a 1-score game. You're on the doorstep of taking the lead down 3 in the waning moments, and you fail to do so in each straight season. So I don't think the Bills are far off at all. I think Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, although they did provide plenty of coach and GM speak during their end-of-season press conference, I thought they put it well, saying that the Bills are just a few plays away and perhaps a few game-changing players away from winning these games against the Kansas City Chiefs. You look at players like Chris Jones, George Karloftis, who came along this season, and then on the offensive side of the ball, Travis Kelce, even Hollywood Brown, who came through toward the end of the year for them off the injured list. They just seem to have more game-changing players and seem to make more game-changing plays in these matchups. And I think that's where the Bills fall short. They have Josh Allen. But beyond that, who can you really hang your hat on either side of the ball in terms of playmakers? And I think that's what they need to bring in more of starting this offseason.
And welcome to the crux of the conversation here today, Alex. I started really thinking about like that Stephon Diggs trade that helped really get the offense and Josh Allen to develop into the player that he is. Do the Bills need to make that kind of a swing on the defensive side of the ball now, considering that, A, their drafting acumen with these players in the first round is not really working out to their strengths, and more importantly, B, having an established presence like that would allow you to be able to draft more freely in terms of building up the rest of your roster? Do they need that veteran presence on D that's a star?
I'll stop short of saying need just because of the fact that I'm not sure how many of those players are out there. Another thing mentioned during the end-of-season press conferences was the fact that there's not a lot of Chris Joneses out there available. Usually if you have that caliber defensive player, that level of a disruptor, particularly up front on the line of scrimmage, those players are locked up for the extended future. So that's first and foremost. You have to identify that player, whether it be via trade, whether it be via free agency, and hopefully able to get your hands on them. But for sure, the Bills need to explore every avenue that they can in order to make that happen. You mentioned the first-round picks. Dalton Kincaid takes a step back this year. Yes, he did sustain the injury, but he wasn't on the injury report as limited for the past several weeks. So I'm not so sure how much of a pass we can give him on his performance this season. I understand the offense changed from what it did a season ago when he recorded 70 receptions and 700 yards, set some rookie records, Bills records, this, that, and the other thing. But he's been a relative disappointment. Keon Coleman in his first season dealt with some injuries. Still a lot left to be told there. But you also look at Kyrie Elam and Greg Rousseau. None of these players have really popped as significant top five, top ten players at their position. And I think the Bills need more of those, particularly in the defensive front, if they hope to get past the Chiefs in the near future.
Alex, when it comes down to it, what do you think are the biggest positions of need for this team going forward into this offseason when it comes to both the draft and free agency? What position are you really looking at as this, okay, they got to get something done here first and foremost? For me, I think it's getting another safety that isn't a box safety. I think that DeMar Hamlin and Taylor Rapp are kind of cut from the same cloth. They are players that they do a lot of the same things, and therefore I think it was very impressive that they managed to have the defense that they did with limited ball hawking capabilities back there.
Yeah, you certainly are lacking that ability at the safety position. Cole Bishop, more of a physical player as well, let a few plays go over the top this season. But if you ask me, I think the top two positions are wide receiver and defensive line, whether it be on the edge or on the interior. I think for my money, I'd prefer an interior run-stopping defensive lineman. That's something that this team really has not had at all under Sean McDermott. They've tried it with Star Lotulelei. They've tried it with Daquan Jones. It just hasn't seemed to work out up front getting that running mate for Ed Oliver. So I would start on the interior of the defensive line, and then obviously you work out to the edge. There's been discussion of selling the farm for Myles Garrett. The Browns say that they're not really ready to trade him. Max Crosby, another player floated by Bills fans. But I think you need to find some way to improve up front. Like I said, Chris Jones, he's made such an impact for the Kansas City Chiefs defense over the years. And that's what you're lacking when it comes to getting Patrick Mahomes on the ground, keeping him in the pocket, and not allowing him to make those superstar-level plays that he makes on a regular basis. But also you have to look at the wide receiver position. In that game against the Chiefs, the Bills just weren't able to get open down the field on a regular basis. Mac Hollins was really your best matchup beater down the field, and although he had a really phenomenal season, I'm not sure you want to rely on Mac Hollins that heavily heading in to the 2025 campaign. So I'm still on the wide receiver train, as many at your station are, and also the defensive line. I think they need to upgrade.
Alex, that's what Derek and I were basically talking about the last hour, the wide receiver in the draft, but the defensive lineman, whether it be edge or on the line, definitely they seem to go veteran talent-wise. You mentioned Myles Garrett. You mentioned Max Crosby. Is there anybody that you would like to see added? Any specific name out there you have on your mind?
I've yet to fully dive in to the free agents, but I pulled them up before I got on with you guys. And I had a little bit of interest in Matthew Judon before the season. I'm not sure of these players fit in the Bills scheme. Like I said, I haven't really delved into it that deeply, but you have a DeMarcus Lawrence coming up as a free agent, I believe. Khalil Mack, a free agent. So there's names out there. I don't know if you're going to be priced out by those guys. Kind of same thing on the interior. You look at, I believe, Josh Sweat, B.J. Hill, D.J. Jones. So like I said, there's names out there to be had, but I'm just not sure that you're going to be able to bring in that big of a name off the free agency pool due to the fact where the Bills are still against the cap. I think they're projected to have about $25 million worth of wiggle room when it's all said and done this offseason after maybe some restructures and stuff. But, I think you have to find a way to bring in a big name. I'm just not sure that there's many out there available at this point.
Alex, when it comes to the wide receiver and wide receiver train, so to say, here, for me, I'm starting to wonder about the status of bringing back Amari Cooper if the price is right. Do you think that that would be a capable addition, that he would be then able to have the full offseason under him and a lot more of a chemistry setup with Josh Allen?
Yeah, it would really depend on the money for me and the term as well. I think you really wouldn't want to go past 1 year with an aging player like that, with someone who went through injury this year. But although he didn't produce the stats, you heard Brandon Bean talk about it in his end of season press conference. I think the addition of Amari Cooper certainly worked for this offense. They averaged more points per game with him in the lineup. It's a player that opposing defenses have to account for, his route running, his matchup beating ability. But I wouldn't put too high of a priority on it. The Bills have 17 pending unrestricted free agents heading into the offseason, and I put out a brief list on X earlier this week, and I put him as one of my non-priority guys to re-sign. I think I'd be more apt to re-sign a Mac Hollins. I know that you're probably going to be looking at different money there, but I didn't hate what Amari Cooper did for the team this year. I'm just not so sure that he's really the best you can do in terms of bringing in that guy who can win down the field, which is what this offense is missing, I believe.
Alex Brasky of the Batavia Daily joining us here on the Western Hotline. Alex, when it comes down to it, the coaching, one of the biggest questions that a lot of fans was looking at was, are they going to get rid of Matthew Smiley? Are they going to do anything making changes there on the special teams? Are you surprised at the decision that was made publicly there that that he will be back on this Bills staff coming in for next year?
I'm not surprised, just due to the fact that Sean McDermott is an accountability first coach, and there's been some coaches let go here in the past few seasons. And I think entering this offseason, the tone he set at that press conference was that accountability. And I think if you let go of your special teams coach, I think you're taking some of that accountability away from yourself. And I think fans certainly would have viewed it that way. So I guess in that sense, I'm not surprised, but in terms of the performance and the production on the field from this unit over the past few years, I think there's surely should have been a conversation whether or not Smiley should have continued on as the coordinator of this unit. I mean, you give up a big play against the Chiefs in the biggest game of the year, and that was like the fourth or fifth big play given up by the special teams unit, and it seemed like all of which cost the team this season. And to be quite honest, Brandon Codrington gave you a good season, but there wasn't really all that much pop on the positive side of things when it came to the special teams either. So at this point, I'm just not sure what Matthew Smiley is doing for you. Sean McDermott says he's going to learn from some of these mistakes this year, but it's been a few years with him, and the results haven't really changed. So I thought there was room for his dismissal, but not surprised just based on the accountability factor with Sean McDermott.
You mentioned time on the job, and let's just go into your thoughts here about it. Obviously, the coach said, you know, had high praises for Joe Brady and Bobby Babich in their first full years as coordinators with this team. How do you think that they did in Joe Brady and Bobby Babich, respectively, here offensively and defensively, with their first full years at the helm?
I give Joe Brady close to full marks. I know that he had some moments this year. You talk about the Ravens game with the trick play. You talk about the Chiefs going away from James Cook in that game. But if you look at what Joe Brady had to work with at the beginning of the season, the everybody eats mentality, that's all well and good, and it's a great rallying cry to have for many teams. But how often do you see that really work out where a team can produce without a star wide receiver? You look at the Green Bay Packers, perhaps it's a team that can do that, but not many other teams around the league can put up 30 points on a regular basis without that true bona fide number one wide receiver. And Joe Brady was able to help Josh Allen and the Bills accomplish that. And also the transformation within the running game. I know a lot of the credit has gone to Aaron Cromer, and rightfully so, getting that offensive line in tip-top shape. But Brady able to make the Bills a two-dimensional offense, I thought, really worked wonders for this group this year and really helped them catapult themselves to MVP-level status, which we'll see, I think, on February 6th is when the awards are announced, whether or not Josh Allen will be announced as the MVP. But as far as Bobby Babich is concerned, I think there was cause for concern. It was his first season as defensive coordinator calling the plays. That's a lot to take on, your first time doing it, as Sean McDermott mentioned. But I like the halftime adjustments that were made throughout the course of the season, but too many slow starts, I thought, especially that game against the Chiefs, allowing them to just really drive down the field with impunity time and time again. Gives you cause for concern whether or not Bobby Babich can take the next step in year two, but he's been with this team for years. He's helped a number of different position groups excel. I think history tells you he'll take the next step, but his performance this year, I'm short of vaulting him to the status that I feel Joe Brady achieved this season.
Alex, I have to ask, after the Bills-Chiefs game, the discourse around the officiating in the NFL has spiked. I'm not a big blame the refs guy. Derek's not a big blame the refs guy. But there are some things in this game I feel like you just can't look past. What's your take on the officiating and the spotting of certain things and how this game went, and just in general?
Yeah, I'm not a big blame the refs guy, and I'm certainly not a big the NFL is rigged guy. I don't think that there's a group of people sitting in a room telling these officials how to call the game in order to achieve a certain outcome. But with that being said, when you look at a five-minute video of constant spots being marked short in what has always been declared as a game of inches, you put a team in that position constantly having to run extra plays to gain first downs. It's eventually going to wear them down, and you saw it at the end of the game where the Bills weren't able to get that first down on the Josh Allen play, which was also controversial, and the play before that with Dalton Kincaid perhaps getting the first down. And then Josh Allen, just because his body is blocked by the player in view of the camera, you're not able to overturn that. But then again, you have the overhead view, which I guess is inexact, and the league doesn't use that for review. So it's just so convoluted, and I think the league likes it that way. They like the arbitrary nature of it so that you can't necessarily point to, oh, this game is rigged, because there is so much human error involved in the processes that go with NFL officiating. I asked Brandon Bean whether or not the league needs to change the way that they mark down and distance. I mean, it's 2025. We're still using the chains. We're still using grown men sauntering in from the sideline, trying to squint and see where the ball is while all the way trying to run in the straight line. So it's just a shoddy process, and one that I'm not so sure will change. But if there's any time for it, it's now. After a game like that in the public spotlight, so many questionable calls going against the Bills. You already saw the overtime rule, I think, changed maybe because of the Bills years ago. I don't know if I have that correct.
Yep.
And then you might see the down and distance rules changed because of the Bills too. So they're not making Super Bowls, but they are making waves with all this controversy that seems to follow them with the officials. But the long and short of it, I'm not on the side of the league is rigged, the game was rigged, the officials were against the Bills. I just chalk it up to consistent ineptitude put forth by the NFL and part-time officials in a billion-dollar industry.
Yeah, I really do think that that has to do with that, Alex.
A perfectly imperfect process for them. That's what it is.
Ooh. Not bad,
I like
Joe.
That.
Not bad, Joe. Alex, last thing I got here for you, with it being as such an infuriating matchup as it is for the Super Bowl, are you still going to stomach it? Are you going to develop some sort of like heartburn or indigestion and watch the Kansas City Chiefs playing for that three-peat?
Absolutely. as much as it's hard to stomach that team on a weekly basis, the way that they win at certain times, the way that their quarterback acts, typically or particularly at the end of the game against the Bills, I believe it was last year with the officials. But yeah, I mean, it's a team going for history. You cannot deny their greatness. I talked about the officials, but you also have to give the Chiefs, I think this goes without saying, although I don't think it does for some, you have to give them a ton of credit in that game. This is, in my opinion, the greatest team ever assembled, going for their third straight Super Bowl. That's never been done, a two straight Super Bowl winner going for their third, much less winning it. So I think they have the best player in the world. They have the best coach in the world. They have the best tight end, I think, in the world, and a great defensive coordinator. So it's a historic team, and you can't keep your eyes off history, no matter how disappointing and bitter you feel about what happened a few weeks prior. And on the other side, I think the Eagles really have a chance in this game. I put out my prediction the other day. I think the Eagles are going to beat the Chiefs pretty handily in this one. The Chiefs haven't been able to stop the run as well as they'd like to, especially the last 2 weeks against the Texans and the Bills. And you look at that Eagles running game with Saquon Barkley, I think he could go for 200 yards in this game, and give me the Eagles to win by a couple of scores.
Alex, I appreciate you. Thank you again for being able to join us as always. And, well, we got a long off season. We'll be able to talk in the future.
Thanks for having me, guys, and Sabre season now.
Oh yeah, oh, yeah, right. Yeah, that's so much fun, Alex. Thank you for that reminder. It's Alex Braske of the Batavia Daily. Man, that's a sobering reality right there.
I think we all said that the night of the loss as well. Oh, we got the Sabres, unfortunately.
I'm pretty sure that, like,
that's before they started the two-game heater, though.
When you threw that joke out there, I'm pretty sure you got glares from, like, Geary, both Parkers.
Yes.
And I think me.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, I make untimely jokes in untimely situations at times, and that was one of them. So that's how I cope is a word that's thrown around quite a bit.
It's my coping mechanism.
Yeah, the jokes are my coping mechanism. You know, how I hide my inner turmoil, I just start making jokes. So, I don't know. Alex put it perfectly, though. Even just how we've been talking about the officiating today, the perfectly imperfect
just
process.
Full time.
Yeah.
It's not a hard process at that point.
How about younger, too, so they don't have, like, cataracts blocking their vision? That'd be awesome.
You probably got to be able to pass tests.
You think?
Like baseline tests in order to have that.
Or is the NFL like, no, let's leave it in there for error?
No, come on, man. The way that – it can't be that bad.
Could it? Could it, though?
Not like that, though. Subjectivity
They're actually just wearing beer glasses the whole time. So
subjectivity is always a thing. And bad calls are made. For example, the Keon Coleman, Trey White play against Baltimore.
Yeah, in Bill's favor.
How does that get called defensive pass interference when Trey White gets trucked?
Right. And that's what we even said at the top of the show, though. Yeah, it happens to the Bills. Everybody gets calls, but it's just the fact that it was the Chiefs on the biggest stage in the conference again.
Again. But again, I think that the discourse has more to ruin that than anything else.
Yeah,
I know that refs are consistently bad all across a lot of sports when they're part-time officials.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my thing is that they need to be held more accountable by the press on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
Like every game, there should be a requirement to talk to the media.
That'd be awesome to have a ref post-game debrief.
Sometimes there are.
Yeah. But this should be a regularity, you're
saying. The press also has to ask for it. That's mm-hmm. the rule.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised that didn't happen this time around.
Yeah, we'll see.
Even the national media, I feel like they'd want
to. I feel like that one is a load of it. I think they just wanted to avoid any sort of questioning that weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, especially because that was on the biggest stage in the conference in national television. Everyone saw it. So
803-0550 is the number to call. How are you feeling about this Bills team going into the offseason? Is there a big name star that you want for this team, namely on the defensive side? Do they need to make the Stephon Diggs trade on the other end?
I like that. I like it.
And can the Sabres from this week be there all season? That'd be fun.
At least to end it. You know, the playoff hopes have dwindled, whatever, but make it fun.
Can you at least make it worth my time? That and more coming up next here on Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer, Joe Calley, this is WGR.
Marketers, are you ready to make an impact with audio advertising? People are hungry for authentic connections in a world buzzing all around us. How do you cut through the noise and truly reach your audience? Visit stateofaudio.com to see Odyssey State of Audio, the Trends Report. Uncover the secrets to high-impact creative. Learn how AI is revolutionizing the industry and get ahead of the curve on measurement and audience trends. Don't just stay in the game. Win it. Visit stateofaudio.com and download your free copy.
If you look at what Joe Brady had to work with at the beginning of the season, the everybody eats mentality, that's all well and good, and it's a great rallying cry to have for many teams, but how often do you see that really work out where a team can produce without a star wide receiver? You look at the Green Bay Packers, perhaps a team that can do that, but not many other teams around the league can put up 30 points on a regular basis without that true bona fide number one wide receiver, and Joe Brady was able to help Josh Allen and the Bills accomplish that.
That was Alex Brasky, who was on with us just on the last segment. And if you want to listen to that, you'll be able to, either through the rewind function on the Odyssey app or on demand when it is put up there.
Mm-hmm.
Evan does a good job making sure that that gets up on the Sports Talk Saturday page on WGR550.com. Derek Kramer, Joe Calley here with you as... Again, it's the march to the off season, and it's I don't want to say that it's the insanity thing of, like, you know, you go in expecting a different result. Like, you do the same thing and you expect a different result.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say that because I think that this season was a lot better for me than I think in years past.
Yes.
Not just because you made it further than you had over the last few years. I think it has more to do with expectation versus reality.
And what we went in.
And for the first time in a little bit, the Bills did not have the higher expectations. Guess what we're going to be at next year? Same thing as we did a couple years ago.
Yep. You made it to the AFC Championship, and then you're like a favorite the entire season.
You're
going
to be held to a higher standard once again, mm-hmm. and you should be.
They play their best as dogs, though, underdogs. Like, not their best, but like they're the most fun to watch as underdogs. I'm not going to lie to you.
Have they, though?
I mean, this season, 2020.
This season, yes, but also they very quickly shed the label.
The minute
that they beat the New York Jets the first time around, it was gone. The underdog label was already gone. Because now it's, all right, you're just storming through the conference right now. Ho hum. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If not for Kansas City, we'd be talking about the one seed for you. And up until the LA game, they were in the conversation for the one seed. So they very quickly got themselves out of this potential underdogs role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they were playing, whatever way you want to put it, this isn't a negative term by any means. They're playing backyard football, it seemed. All smiles, all the time. They were having fun playing the game they love. Like, that's the vibe I got from them for the majority of this season, right?
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't been the same as years past.
It's been the most fun, I think, enjoying on a week-to-week basis than it had been for a couple of seasons. And I think that's where I am perfectly fine. I know that it's losing to the Chiefs again, and it is the same old story. But it's not the same old story verbatim. You do continue to challenge that team. You do continue to push them to the brink. I'm still convinced there's like pixie dust or something going on that they have.
Dude, the red water. It's voodoo magic.
It's the red water.
It's a blood ritual of some kind.
Red water.
Like, yeah, come on.
Where they consistently dominate the records when it comes to one-score games. But you've had them at home. You've had them on the road now in the playoffs as well. Plenty on the road. But you've even gotten them at home. And you've still been going until the final bell. Again, you're taking this team 12 rounds. There are not many teams that can do this in the entire league, let alone with the consistency that the Bills do. That's where it's A, frustrating, but B, kind of relieving.
Right, in the retrospective, at least uplifting. Once the dust settles, you look at...
Not relieving, uplifting.
Yeah.
It's uplifting because you know that they're going to be back. They're not going to sit down. They're not going to go ahead and pretend anything's perfectly fine. Sean McDermott said something during the presser this week of there are teams that make it to the AFC Championship game and they're never heard from again.
Mm-hmm.
Jacksonville.
Yes.
Looking at you. The Bills aren't that.
No.
And granted, they have a quarterback. Jacksonville didn't at that time.
Mm-hmm.
They kind of still have
that
a question
Blake
there,
Bortles,
too.
Yeah.
But my point being this, they are not happy with the end result. And that is encouraging to me. And it's very comforting to know that this Bills team is one of the few that consistently keeps up with Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Because at some point, it's got to end, right? The nonsense of the Kansas City Chiefs has to end.
That's where my head's at. Like, I think there is a light at the end of the tunnel where this is over, but it's just when is the question.
Yeah. And again, Baltimore, Cincinnati, they've lost in the AFC Championship in the prior 2 years. It's not that it's like, oh, why aren't they getting as much heat? No, it's just a conference the league as a whole has a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have a team going for the first ever three-peat without it being a problem.
Oh, yeah.
The NFL has a Chiefs problem. The frustrating thing is that the Bills are one of the best teams in the league while this is going on.
A like two. I mean, I know.
Not even a like two. This is not Tom Brady dominating your division.
No, I know
that. For 17 years.
Yeah. They're five straight division titles. They're dominating their division every season. They're dominating out-of-conference players as well on a smaller scale. Yeah. Like, it's just... It is uplifting. You're absolutely right. But at the same time, it's like, come on.
Can you break through once?
Yes.
Please.
Literally one time. And I watched a clip yesterday that got me in the feels a little bit. Peyton Manning and Tom Brady meeting at the field in Peyton Manning's last ever AFC Championship appearance, the season he retired. And I'm mm-hmm. like, what is this going to look like when Allen and Mahomes meet in that? You know, like, I'm thinking ahead like that. Like, I know there's two other great quarterbacks in Joe Burrow and Lamar Jackson. I know they're going to be fighting for it. Peyton Manning even said it himself on the Pat McAfee show yesterday. Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson will both have their time.
Yeah.
But I wonder what that is going to look like just based on this three-peat. If they get the three-peat, and can the Bills break through?
It ruins a lot of the legacy talk, not just of Allen, but of Burrow and Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
To a point where like it's broken fan discourse.
Yeah, because one team has the monopoly.
One team has the monopoly, and everyone's arguing over number two. Like, Allen has played consistently very well throughout the postseason, especially in these losses. He does end up having great statistical lines against the Kansas City Chiefs. Joe Burrow is the only quarterback that broke through in the postseason against Kansas City. Lamar Jackson is a two-time MVP, possibly three, as we'll find out.
Yeah.
And has a lot of accolades. But has statistically faltered more times than not in the postseason.
Yeah, playoff wins are not a majority stat for him.
They're not a favorable stat.
Not at all.
Him.
Where Josh Allen... His playoff performances are up there.
His
with
numbers
Mahomes,
are up there.
Truthfully.
Yes.
Like, and he's just not winning. Like, that's the problem.
Correct. So, what this does, though, is it ruins the discourse of legacy for all three of those other players in Burrow, Jackson, and Allen. All three of them, it is, yeah, you've got all this stuff, but do you have anything else? No. Like, that's the thing that Ravens fans can hold on to, is that Jackson has hardware. Jackson has the hardware. He is the only one that has multiple trophies of some kind. Burrow has a piece of hardware, the Lamar Hunt trophy,
mm-hmm.
for a conference champion. Josh Allen has nothing.
Nothing.
When it comes to hardware.
Nope. Just broken records. That's it.
But what he does have is the team that consistently threatens.
Yeah.
Baltimore's there too. I'm not going to ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to write them off for having lost to Buffalo.
No.
The Bills
that
and
game
the Ravens.
Was close.
The Bills and the Ravens are right there with Kansas City. Very consistently, even.
They play them tough regular season
Ravens,
and postseason.
The Ravens lost by a toe against Kansas City this year in the first game.
Yep, and they were a two-point conversion from having a better chance to go play them in the AFC Championship.
Exactly. So we can't pretend that Baltimore's not right there.
No.
Cincinnati removed themselves from the table.
Because they can't win early in the season at all.
And because Mike Brown is just getting in the way.
Yeah.
Their owner refusing to pay players is now becoming a problem.
They're even talking about it at the Pro Bowl conference. Like the
Trey Hendrickson
meetings.
And T. Higgins are pieces that you should be keeping on.
Yes. Even Jamar Chase wants more money, and it's like,
yeah,
like you gotta. He's a star wide receiver. You have to pay him. Another team will.
Bengals ownership has removed the Bengals from the table.
Yeah,
and the defensive roster that they now have, considering where they were even a couple of years ago, that shifted so badly that the defense kept them out of the playoffs.
Yes, their offense with a good defense,
again, average defense.
Burrow.
Not one of the worst in the National Football League. Cincinnati's in the playoffs.
Burrow would have been atop the MVP conversation.
Oh, yeah. If they make the playoffs, Burrow probably is the MVP
exactly.
because he's got the numbers.
Exactly.
And he would have to overcome a subpar defense.
Mm-hmm.
But their defense was so bad that they missed entirely.
Yeah.
And it just... That's the Bengals removing themselves from the conversation. They almost made it with Jake Browning the year prior. Like, last year, they almost made it with Jake Browning
mm-hmm.
as their starter for half the year.
I mean, that's...
Gutting their way through.
Yeah.
And then this year, their defense was so bad.
A year, it was a huge change.
But, like, people that are like, oh, Joe Burrow's the only guy that's beaten him in the conference champion. Yeah, you got to make the dance in order to be able to find the partner.
Yeah. It's been a while since they've made it.
You picked your... that team picked themselves up and sat at the kids' table instead.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Billy Madison playing dodgeball.
Exactly.
That's what the Bengals are right now. They're just beating up on the bad teams and not winning against any teams that have any merit until it was too late.
And mistreating injuries badly. I mean, Joe Burrow, look at that calf injury, right? All yep. of that. Mishandling.
The elbow injury. Yep. Like
everything was so mishandled, it's not even funny.
Yeah, it is tough. But again, legacy for these teams is really going to be called into question. But it's only because there's one team consistently getting all of it.
Mm-hmm.
The Bills are there. The Ravens are there. If you're a fan of either of those teams, good news. You're in the conversation and you should be.
As much as the Chiefs are there year after year, so are the Bills and Ravens. And they're going to be. They have good squads, both of them. There's a reason they were playing a good game in the divisional round against each other. Like, they're going to be back.
Yes.
And if
they
not better.
Good games against Kansas City.
Yes.
So it's not like they're this, you know, it's not like there's paper tigers from either of them.
No.
So.
There's merit to both teams, and they're going to continue to play at a high level. It's only a matter of time until it caves.
Exactly.
That's how I feel.
803-0550 is the number to call. Sports Talk Saturday, we keep rolling on as, you know, we are talking about the start of the Bills offseason. And what does it mean for this team going forward here on WGR? Last segment of hour number two here. Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly on a Sports Talk Saturday here with you. Top of the hour was Alex Braski of David Daily joining us. You can listen to that one as it gets posted online on our website at WGR550.com or using the Rewind feature on the Odyssey app. It's good to talk to Alex again.
Mm-hmm.
It had been a minute. Been a minute.
Especially on the end of season debrief, just to kind of get how everyone's feeling. It's nice, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was hype for the entire playoff run. And then
we had a lot of fun taking those calls in those last 2 weeks, heading into the Baltimore and the Kansas City games. Every one of you that had called into those shows, like, that was fun. It was so much fun to try to get through with that hope together, and I wouldn't trade that for anything, honestly. I just wish that we got more of it. That's all. Could you imagine how chaotic this show would be if the Bills were heading to a Super Bowl? Like, this show.
It would be, yeah, and it's the week before, too, so we would have another one before.
Forget that. The day before, I'm pretty sure we're getting preempted for, like, you know, everyone else.
Yeah, Category 5 crapshoot on Sports Talk Saturday.
Category 5 pixie dicks. Pixie sticks.
Oh, no.
Let's go to break.